The people of El Salvador, of Guatemala, Honduras, they usually leave for one of two reasons, not because they want to, but either because they are fleeing some harm or because they simply cannot satisfy the basic needs of themselves or their family if they stay.
This is Vice President Harris on Monday afternoon during a White House event. Her analysis is consistent with results from a recent Migration Policy Institute report. It's a unique, in-depth analysis of the complex reasons for regional displacement and migration across Central and South America. And the report finds, quote, violence, insecurity, and natural disasters have been complex and longstanding triggers of migration, but economic factors were participants' primary motivation for desiring to emigrate. Now, back in March, President Joe Biden assigned the vice president to lead the administration's response to migration at the southern border, with a specific focus on addressing the root causes leading so many to move across national boundaries. In response, Vice President Harris has been corralling private American companies to invest in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, or the Northern Triangle, with the goal of jumpstarting sustainable growth in these local economies. On Monday, in an event co-hosted by the State Department and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in collaboration with the Partnership for Central America, the VP announced that her office has secured $1.2 billion in private investments for the region.
The work of this group of leaders in this call to action has been the work of addressing one of the main reasons that they leave, and that is the lack of economic opportunity if they stay at home.
Okay, that's the top line. But dig down in the White House press release announcing some of the details of these new investments, and you'll discover some very big names offering some very, let's call them, modest and indistinct investments. There's Microsoft, a company whose third quarter revenue was $45.3 billion. Apparently, they have, quote, catalyzed the development of digital access training centers. Okay. There's MasterCard, with just under $5 billion in third quarter revenue. And the White House brief indicates that, quote, MasterCard has partnered with Walmart to enable access to credit for underserved citizens. And yep, PepsiCo's there. Now, their third quarter beat expectations and came in at $20.19 billion in revenue. PepsiCo has promised to, quote, spread regenerative farming practices across 7 million acres. And you may not immediately recognize the name Parkdale Mills, but the company, based in my state of North Carolina, is the largest privately owned yarn spinner in the U.S. They make the cotton that becomes products for companies like Lands' End, Jockey, and L.L. Bean. Now that's more familiar, right? So Parkdale Mills has committed to, quote, build a new yarn spinning facility in Honduras and to expand an existing one. Together, these two facilities will likely create about 1,000 jobs. For a bit more context, according to reporting from Vox, 2019 foreign investment in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras totaled about $2.2 billion. That same year, migrants from those nations who found work in the U.S. sent back $22 billion in remittances. And so, take a trip with me to a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas, a place marked by my skepticism about the likelihood that MasterCard, Walmart, Microsoft, and PepsiCo are about to create more just, inclusive, and robust economies in Central America. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and on today's Takeaway, you've just crossed over into the Side-Eye Zone. Oscar Chacon is Executive Director of Alianza Americas, who specializes in U.S. Latin American relations and migration. Oscar, welcome to the Side-Eye Zone.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Melissa.
Now, is the Biden administration's approach here a step in the right direction, or is this just about big companies expanding their profits with low-wage workers?
Well, ironically, I would say it's both. It's a very, very minor step in the right direction. But there is no question in my mind that in the end, we are essentially replicating what has been part of the problem in Central American countries, specifically Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Namely, you know, the problem with direct foreign investment is that it's been very, very small, that it basically reinforces the very economic basis that have allowed for so many people not to be able to fulfill their basic aspirations for a decent way of life, raising families, you know, with a degree of prosperity. And that is what I'm afraid this particular initiative may not help undo, simply because there are no reasons to suppose that this is going to come out any different than in the past, you know, we have seen. I believe that one of the challenges for the U.S. is that they need to understand that the necessary measures will require, among other things, to really identify a new set of rules and a new set of players for direct foreign investment to actually have a chance to make an impact and ultimately change, you know, the way these countries have functioned, sadly, for more than, you know, two centuries.
When you make that point about repeating the kinds of investment we've already seen there, I mean, I have to say I was a little gobsmacked about the garment industry or the yarn spinning in Honduras, in part because, I mean, American college students were organizing against multinational corporations like Nike for their labor practices in Honduras just a decade ago. And now we have the White House actually celebrating what appear to be very similar jobs as though they are a meaningful departure.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that it's very interesting to look, you know, from a longer time frame to foreign investment. I recall very well that back in the 1970s, U.S. corporations that came to invest in Central American countries actually got in trouble with the local economic elites because they wanted to pay better wages. They actually wanted to give more benefits to workers, but local economic elites would basically say, you are absolutely doing the wrong thing. You are making these people become too lazy. You're giving them too many perks, and you need to do business the way we do them. And the way they do business, ironically, today, is the way global corporations tend to operate at the global scale. And it is because it ensures much more profits at the end of the day. And I think that that is, again, one factor that would need to change very dramatically if we are to see countries like these ever become places where people truly don't want to live from, because they are places that are pleasant, places where people can actually provide a dignified way of life for themselves and their children. But that's not what is happening now, and I don't have any reason to assume that what I just announced will actually point us in any different way.
I'm also interested in why the Biden administration has accepted the premise that U.S. interests are best served by actually curbing migration to the U.S. This same policy report that I talked about a bit earlier actually suggests that one of the ways to improve the economies in Central American countries is actually to expand legal pathways for Central Americans to migrate into the U.S. basically on short-term legal work visas, since the remittances are you know, tenfold more than the investment to actually sort of allow those remittances to flow, but to have them flow to public works projects rather than simply to individual households. But of course, that would create more incentive to migrate to the U.S. But that could be good for the U.S. I guess I'm wondering about this idea that closing the border is what's best.
Well, you are absolutely correct. I mean, and I think it's important to understand the Biden administration has found itself completely trapped by a desire to do things differently when it comes to how to handle migration, but at the same time, refusing to once and for all divorce from a narrative that has painted migration and migrants as some sort of evil that we need to neutralize. If you look at the facts, migration has been vastly positive for the United States of America. And if you just look at remittances, it's been also pretty good, you know, for thousands of households in Central American countries that are the recipients of these remittances that are sent from the U.S. So the first thing that we should do is not to assume that bringing more foreign investment and fundamentally changing the economic rules in these countries is something we need to do so that there is no migration. Because the fact is, we have been the largest beneficiary of migration from these countries, Mexico included. But we need to also understand that the drivers towards making life better in these countries should not just be stop migration, because I really believe that that's the wrong approach. I believe that one more powerful reason for why we should be indeed casting a different economic approach in Central American countries is because of the larger changes in geopolitics. You have now China and Russia absolutely looking at these countries as places where they want to gain more influence. So a larger, more important question for the US should be, what can we do as the largest power in this hemisphere to absolutely make ourselves a better proposition to countries like this, other than, you know, what China or Russia may be pushing through? And let's be frank, I mean, those other countries don't have any problem working with dictators if that's the partnership that they consider better for their interests.
You know, obviously, there are key economic reasons, but these political questions that you're drawing our attention to are absolutely crucial. And I'm wondering about, how is it that corruption, or at a minimum, right? So corruption may be at a maximum, but at a minimum, at least anti-democratic or non-democratic governance in these nations also affects sort of what this kind of private investment can even accomplish.
To tell you the truth, I mean, I think that a lot of these private investors, which, as you well pointed out before, compared to remittances, are a little dwarf because they are so small, but they often use the very corrupt nature in these countries, the very sick ways in which economic elites and political elites have gone about handling foreign investment to their benefit. And that is something that we must also strive to change. Let's take the case of Honduras. You know, everyone knows that Honduras has become, over the past 12 years, essentially a narco state. But many foreign investors don't have a problem, you know, coming into Honduras, so long as they can get away with whatever they want. And they don't mind, you know, working with corrupt politicians that are very known to be linked to narco-trafficking gangs throughout the hemisphere. And so I believe that part of what we need to understand is that a lot must change if we are to see these countries become better places.
Oscar Chacon is the executive director of Alianza Americas. Thank you so much for your insight and your conversation today.
It's been my pleasure.